be the problem here. It's a very, very short problem. So, the Gemara says that there's such a thing as setting up a tainus, a fast day, for some sort of tragedy, something bad that's going to happen to Jewish people. Okay, like if it's not raining, so you can set up a fast day because the rain, they need to, you know, the crops grow. So there's an idea of making a fast day. So it says that Rava would not make, or the leader, I guess, sets up the fast day. So Rava was a rabbi, and he would not set up the fast day on a rainy day. Cloudy day. Okay, why not? What's wrong with the cloudy day? It says, because the Pasuk says, Sakosa be'anan lach me'av melucha. Something me'av or tefila. Means that God in Echa, when it's depicting the, it's talking about the tragedy of the destruction of Beis HaMikdash, it says that you were like covered up. It's talking about God. It's like God was covered up in a cloud for the Mila couldn't get through. It's like describing in vivid terms the way it felt as if God was behind the clouds and he couldn't see or hear our tefillas because the clouds were blocking. Avi is just describing the way it felt. Obviously God hears the tefillas, but it means felt as if we're davening our hearts out, but you're not answering. Because tragedies of the time of the Korban and the destruction of Beis HaMikdash were so great that it felt that way. So since the Navi says, it's like you were behind the cloud from our tefillah to pass by. So based upon that, Pasuk, that God was like in a cloud, so he says that he wouldn't make a tainus on a cloudy day. Strange, right? To say the least, because obviously God did hear through clouds. He could see through clouds. And because the Pasuk says that, okay, yeah, but it's just a mashal, right? It's just trying to say how bad it felt, that as if God was behind the cloud, but it doesn't really make sense to say that on a cloudy day, God can't hear our fast, because the idea of a fast day is to daven, right? Okay. So the Rashba quotes the Rav Haigon's explanation, who explained this, and he says four words. Yakoso samo simenra. The reason why he wouldn't do it is because the Pasuk called it or placed the clouds as a bad sign. Clouds become a bad simon, a bad sign. They're like a bad sign because the Pasuk made them, so therefore it's not appropriate to make a tainus on that kind of a day, to make a fast day on that kind of a day. The question is, it's not really explaining the point, because what does that mean, the bad sign? You don't hold by a bad sign. I mean, if the person wants to do tefillah, does tefillah. So there's no such thing as because it's like bad luck or something. What does that mean, the Pasuk made it into a bad day? Right? Yes.
I mean, I feel like it made it into cloudy day. It's not as sunny day. Like, how cloudy, it's like, it's not as nice. People look at nature, they admire it.
Right.
And so then they keep that to
right.
Focus and have it in a fast day. Like,
right.
Day, it can be hard.
Right. Okay. So how would you explain that the Pasuk made it? According to that, it's not really because of the Pasuk. It's just because
it doesn't have to be like that. I mean, no matter what it's like.
Right.
But, like, plus, it does kind of hint to like that idea that it might be better to do it on a sunny day.
Okay. Here you go. Okay, here's it. Yes.
And it sounds like it's referring to depression.
Okay.
State of mind that a person is in, direction of Beis HaMikdash, or even if the cloudy day.
Right.
They're usually more down. So maybe it's saying that the purpose of a fast is to remind you that it takes away all your gaiva, it takes away the barriers that are between you and Hashem so that you can tshuva
right.
And reconnect with Hashem.
Right.
So maybe when you're in a depressed state of mind, mm-hmm. either it's not the best time to do it, or yeah. you're already in a state of mind where you've removed your gaiva and uh-huh. you don't need right. the addition of a tainus uh-huh. to bring you to that state.
So are you saying that it doesn't really mean on a rainy day? You're saying it's a mashal? Like it means when a person's
depressed? It's still a mashal. And like Simon Ra kind of reminded me, Shaul HaMelech, it always talks about how he had Ruach Ra.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Right. It's a bit, there's uh-huh. a connection there, but
right. uh-huh.
he right. had cast, like depression. He mm-hmm. had
right.
something going on.
Right, I understand. So. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I just would think that it would be easier to explain it that it means it what it says it. Like it says it means he didn't set up a tainus on a rainy day. You know? So, I mean, which is perfectly fine as a pshat, right? And it sounds like it means it's saying a halachic thing that he wouldn't do that. So, I guess if it's impossible to understand literally, then I guess you'd say it's just a reference to depression or, you know. But the simplest pshat, it sounds reasonable to assume that he really, really means it. In which case, we still don't understand the reason for it, but You know, it's the thing in general that Klal should be is that if you can't be literal, something is like crazy about it, then the same must not be. But what's crazy isn't the fact, it's more the explanation is a little bit strange, you know? Because like this idea of the bad semen. But I think it would be better, or simpler, it certainly sounds like it means literally you wouldn't make a tiny son fast on a cloudy day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so that part is literal. But
oh, it is?
Yeah.
But so what is the problem?
So he wouldn't make a tinus on a cloudy day because that people are not in the right mindset because of the cloud cover. People are not in the right mindset to daven for this tragedy that they're.
Right. But you mean like everyone's depressed on a cloudy day? Like I guess there may be more of a tendency towards the sadness or something like, but not that much, you know.
Something called seasonal affect disorder without getting up.
Right. But that's people who have the disorder, right? Or it's everybody.
You have to have a tendency towards the disorder, but it's brought on by environmental factors.
Right. Okay, I hear you. Okay, you remember the problem?
Yeah.
Well, I think though, in the Navi, in Eicha, it's in Eicha, and the Eicha describes the way, it's like the Navi, was describing the tragedy and the way it felt for the Jews, like their God was like an enemy. It's like the Navi is speaking his mind about how could it be this terrible city? You know, like he's talking about how it felt, the total destruction and the desolation, had a feeling as if God was behind clouds. But it means as if God was like behind clouds. God was in a cloud, like he couldn't hear us. But it's a mashal. It doesn't mean God could actually be in a cloud, but it felt that way. Which would mean, like, if you're trying to talk to someone, they're behind the cloud. Like, you could talk and you could wave and you could do whatever you want, but they're not going to see you. So it felt that way. But it doesn't really mean that that's possible. It's a way of depicting how they felt. Like, they're crying out their hearts, they're doing tshuva, they're trying to daven, but it's just simply not getting them anywhere. You know what I mean?
Every day, it just feels like you can. Sometimes it does feel like barrier, even though it really isn't, but it's just logical.
Right. Okay, good. So again, the question I'd ask is, what does it have to do? Like the what does it do to the pasuk? Shakasav samo simen ra. That's all he adds on. You know, it's a pasuk made it a bad simen. Point to that is nothing to do with the pasuk per se. It's just an idea.
Okay. So I still feel like the way that the pasuk made a bad simen is because like not something that it needs to be that way. You know, like you really, most people would think, okay, fine, like there's cloudy, whatever.
Yeah, right.
But like. I mean, like the fact that there is that pasuk, it adds to it.
Okay, good. But, I mean, I think you're right, is that if you didn't have a pasuk or anything, then come on, so it's cloudy, big deal. I mean, it's true, cloudy, people don't like it, but bottom line is, it's day tshuva, you do tshuva, and the cloudiness isn't going to, not that big of a factor in terms of a person. But I think you're saying it's good, is that, see, people look at psukim, and people theory, you know, I mean, especially this pasuk is read every year, everyone, people know it, and people used to know Nach well, you know? We don't know it as well anymore. But, so, if you have in your, like, if you're well-versed in the psukim, and a cloudy day is going to remind you of this pasuk. Pasuk is a cloudy day, and especially they have tinus, you know, so you're thinking of praying to God, and it's a cloudy day, so what happens is it's going to bring to mind in the person this pasuk, okay? And the pasuk is a negative pasuk. It is a sad pasuk. A negative pasuk, and it's like something you don't want to think about. Like when a person's trying to do tshuva, I think it's a lot of it is based on the psychology, the way a person feels, and the way the person, you know, his attitude towards doing tshuva. And the premise of doing tshuva, a tainus, is a person should feel that God is there, ready to answer in order to do tshuva. And if a person has a feeling of that God is enveloped in a cloud, and it brings memories of God never not answering us, and of the Chorban, where we could daven, and nothing happens. So it's in a certain sense, it's like a scary, and it's a little bit of a turnoff, or it makes it harder to get going in the tshuva. Part of the premise, what allows a person to move to tshuva, is, you know, Karav Hashem L'chol Korav, first God. The idea of God is open, is a Shomayat Tefillah. And that's what allows a person to, the tainus is an easy thing to do. A person has to really reach deep into their selves and to think of it, to do tshuva and to turn higher. And that type of a state demands a certain mindset. It's not just a simple, look, let's be intellectual about it and let's just do tshuva. Now, you know, it's not so simple. There's a psychology of a person. And so far as a person sees the cloudy day, and he said a person is affected by their surroundings. But here, it's not just that they're affected by it. It's easy to just laugh away a rainy day. per se, because you know rain was rain have anything to do with anything. But now there's a pasuk, which although it doesn't exactly mean that, but it sounds like it means that, and it references, it brings to mind the idea of God's distance from man. That's something that kind of is daunting, scary when a person wants to daven and is trying to get somewhere in that tefillah. Have it read that. Oh, you want to know it?
It
worked.
Please announce yourself.
Wow. That's pretty good. Hello? Can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Okay, again. That's a really long code.
Do you know it?
Yeah.
Or no?
Yeah, I know. Should I tell you?
At least I want to tell you.
Hold on, okay. 209-47. Uh-huh. Code is... Yeah. So, you guys hear me? Well, that's the main point, I think, which is conveyed by this chazal and the station, is that tefillah involved, it's not the same thing as like, maybe learning also is this way, but learning is more of like an abstract activity. So to speak, escape the world and just get into the world of ideas. And it's not always easy to do that, but like in a certain sense, you're removed from self. Tefillah involves your emotions, involves your person. And it's not just easy to just say, oh, it's a day of tainus, just do tshuva, tefillah. These things demand that very much dependent upon a person's internal state, and people are affected by the weather, but not just the weather. Weather is easy to kind of push aside, but now the weather kind of clicks with a basak, and it brings to mind the idea of the distance. And that feeling, the way a person feels about God, could prevent them from getting into the mindset of tshuva. So Rava, in setting up a Yom Tainus, he wanted to set up in a way based upon his knowledge of people's emotions, in a way that would be most conducive, most likely to lead people to a proper day of tshuva. You know, and if he did it in a way that had a negative, it's just not worth it, do it the next day, do it a different day. You know, he's sensitive to people's psychologies and to their...
The pasuk say that then.
No, so the pasuk's saying it because the pasuk is not taking this into account. It's depicting it's a mashal talking about the tragedy of the time. It felt in the time of the Churban, and Navi felt that with davening and davening, and it was true at that time. It was true at that time that they could daven as much as they want. There's a gzardin of Misa, and does God appear like an enemy? It means the Hashgacha was against them. There's Hester upon them, absolute Hester upon them. God was turned away from them, and whatever they did, it didn't do anything. That was the case. But in a Tainus, there's nothing to say that that's still the case of the Tainus, which is going to make a Tainus, and we're not supposed to be thinking, reminded of the utter Hester upon them, which existed in the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. That's the unique, the rare thing, and that's not something you want to remind everybody of when they're trying to tell tshuva, do tainus. You want to think of the positive aspect of the tainus. That could help. If a person feels that they could get somewhere in the yom of tainus, then I wish they could, really could. So don't put in their face the cloudy day, which brings to mind the pasuk. I mean, I think this is the main point, is that it wouldn't work if a person didn't know the pasuk. It's not like the pasuk made it a bad sentiment, now it's a bad luck charm or something. It's because people know the pasuk. People know rainy day, they know the pasuk, it's a day of tainus, and they associate, oh, we're davening to God, it's a cloudy day, uh-oh. And it just, your mind just works on these types of associations, these types of connections, and that's going to dissuade a person or prevent the person from really feeling. And Rava was sensitive to people's psychology. The leader has to be sensitive to people's psychology. You can't just say, look, today is the day, we have to fast today, everybody forget those crazy emotions, those associations, forget about that. Which you could say, it is crazy, what does that have anything to do with it? It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't, but people's psyche doesn't matter. That's just the reality of the thing. And if you want to move people and you want people to turn to tshuva, you'll be much more successful if you take these things into account. No?
So does that have application for personal tshuva, or is it just for
I think so. For instance, if you have some day that you want to do tshuva and it brings up some association of whatever. God, I don't know. You have to come up with your you know, whatever's going to... You have to be... So the main thing is when you want to daven, go to a place that you're able to daven, you're able to focus on, brings up positive ideas about tefillah, about God. Don't get into certain negative... There's certain things that you have to know your own emotions and know what makes you, what moves you, and what makes you, what prevents you. If you're in a situation that you know is going to prevent your kavana or is going to bring up certain depressing thoughts, maybe that's not the way to be able... That's not the mindset. I mean, it's personal. I mean, tzibur is going by a universal thing, but in your own tefillah, you have to be sensitive to your own emotions and know what's the best way for you to do tshuva and to do tefillah.
I feel like if a person, it happens to be a cloudy day,
right,
they shouldn't use that as an excuse. You should do tshuva as soon as you possibly can. You never know if tomorrow you might not have the chance to do tshuva.
That's true. But if at the same time, it depends if you're using it as an excuse or if you're being realistic. If you realistically know you're not going to be able to do it because it's going to prevent you from doing it. So you could say, today is my tshuva day. You're going to be unsuccessful. You're not going to do tshuva tomorrow because you already did it today. How many days in a row are you going to do it for? So if you really are genuine about doing tshuva, you'll say, listen, today's not the right day. I'd love to do it today, but it's just not going to work out. I know my emotions are wrong. It's not going to happen. So, of course, you have to be honest about these things. See, if it's just an excuse, then you'll never end up doing it. Then, you know, but it's not saying push it off until 10 years from now. Just wait for tomorrow. It'll be a sunny day. The forecast is, you know.
With tefillah, I learned that you're supposed to daven even if you're not necessarily going to be able to pay attention to every word. You're not going to be able to have kavanah and say it in the perfect way, but you should still daven.
Right. Well, tefillah is a mitzvah every day. And tefillah is different than the day of tainus. Day of tainus is like once in a while type of an event, and you want to make it special. You don't want it to be done improperly.
Right.
Hello? They had to enter in the code like 3 times.
Please announce yourself.
Miriam? Hello?
Yes.
Do you know, is that happening because of me or because of you? Do you know?
I don't know. Is this the same phone that you were using last week, or it's different?
It's different in my house. It's the same number, though. Are you getting disconnected or I'm getting disconnected?
But you're getting disconnected because I still hear the music.
Oh. Yeah, I don't really know why that's happening. This is my house phone. I don't know why that should happen, but...
I wonder if it's the...
It's buggy. I have problems with charcoal.
Yeah? It's just... These things happen.
It's free bomb. It's cool.
Yeah? Okay. It's true. You see what happens also sometimes.
You pay, it's not like that.
What?
If you pay, it's not like that.
Yeah, it's a better service if you pay.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just keep trying. Okay, are you able to hear, Miriam? I mean,
you're fine.
I mean, in terms of the getting cut out, are you able to follow, given that I'm cutting out every minute or two?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so if you're not there, tell us. Okay. So, I'm sorry, we're in the middle. Yeah. Right, so I'm saying tinnitus is like a unique kind of a thing. It's not an everyday type of experience, so you want to make it right, you want to do it right. Doesn't mean make excuses. If that's part of what Rava has to, you know, husband out, and any leader or any person has to know themselves and has to be sensitive to these types of things. There's no mitzvah to do it if it's not going to work. Like on a tinnitus, you don't have a choice on a real day of tinnitus. So if you're making your own personal day of tinnitus, don't do it. If you know it's, let's say it's a really hot day, you know, it's supposed to be 100 degrees outside, you know you're going to be too hot, you're not going to be able to focus on fasting. So don't do it, do it tomorrow. It's just not, the point isn't just to say I fasted. The point is to really have a productive fast day, which is the day of tinnitus and tshuva and tefillah. If you're not going to do it right, then don't do it. Wait, don't you get emotional satisfaction of fasting? That's not the point of the thing. The point of the thing is to really make a change and to work on oneself. If it's not going to work because of whatever reason, then pick a different day. Yeah. Good question. Okay. Okay. Good.
From practically speaking, I mean, if both then, so what did they like declare fasting for a particular day, and then if it was cloudy, not have it?
I don't know. It's a good question, because we usually do it the day before, so I don't know if they had the Weather Channel either. You know, so I don't know exactly how we know.
I feel like people knew, like the rabbi,
which,
what,
yeah.
They knew with that rabbit, oh,
yeah.
Cloudy, I guess,
yeah.
Not fasting.
Right, it could be. Or it could be they had, like, you know, presumably they had a base canastas in the town, and the town, everyone, like, you know, wasn't as widespread.
They figured out.
I guess so. I mean, I would think they have to decide the day before, because tinnitus in general has to be declared the day before. But I guess sometimes you can tell, whatever, do your best. But if you got the feeling, though, however they knew, that however they predicted it, that it was going to be or any day, presumably it wouldn't do it. The idea is the main point, but it's I don't know exactly the practicality of it.
Wow.
You know? But what's interesting, though, is what's this piece, is the Gemara just says he wouldn't do it on a fast day, on a rainy day, because it's pasuk, you know? It doesn't say much at all. And the Rashba just says a little bit. He says, and I think he's pointing to the idea, she'akasav samo simen ra. It's not because... See, the simple way you read it is because the Pasuk says that God is in a cloud. We say, okay, so what? What does that mean, God's in a cloud? But the Rashba's point is, no, it's the Pasuk made it the bad sign. It's not that there's really a reality to a cloud, because God's not in clouds, but it's because the Pasuk said it, now it turns out it's a bad simon, because now a person thinks of it, and it affects them psychologically. So it's the simon ra, it means it's a bad sign, it doesn't mean... In reality, it means in a person's mind, psychologically. A person's mind works by these. That's the point, I guess, is that a person's mind, psychology, works with symbols and works with associations. It's just the way the psyche works. So, is it true? No. it's not true that because it's cloudy it has anything to do with God and clouds. That's crazy. But that's the way our psyches work. Our psyches work by associations, by these types of things. So you can't just say, forget it. That's just the bottom line. That's the way psyche is. You can't undo that. That your psyche can be affected by these associations. What are you going to do about it? So to just pretend that they're not there is denying, you know, you're going to miss the point. You're not going to be able to do a proper tshuva. Okay? Question? Okay. So let's do this. Let's start a new topic. Okay, new topic, and it's longer than this week is going to allow, but let's, you know, we'll get it started. Maybe we'll answer some questions. It's a very interesting piece, actually. Very interesting. So the Gemara is based upon, I'm sorry that you don't have books. If I remembered earlier, I would have got a photograph of it, but let's see here. Oh, here we go. Okay. So the Pasuk by the Meraglim. Pasuk by the Meraglim, by the spies. So God said, basically said into Moshe that he was going to wipe out all the Jews, right, because they failed. Because they were afraid to do that, so God was going to wipe them all out. God is so Moshe Rabbeinu is a daven to God. He had a few tefillas. One of his tefillas was he just asked for rachman. Okay, he asked for God's rachman. But another thing is he says the nations of the world are going to say, "Bilti yecholas Hashem, la'avi osan el haaretz hazos." Is that the reason why Hashem killed the Jews in the desert is because Hashem was unable to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. They're not going to say, "Oh, Jews sinned, and therefore God punished them." They're going to say, "I know this plan. God took them out of Mitzrayim, but he wasn't going to be able to beat the enemies in Eretz Yisrael. And because he wasn't able to, that's why he killed the Jews." Right? That's what they're going to say. "Bilti cholas Hashem lahavi asam hazel haaretz asher nishba lohem vayishchatei b'amidbar." So it's going to be a chilul Hashem. People aren't going to interpret it in the proper way. They're going to interpret it as saying God's unable, God's weak, and therefore the whole plan of the part of the whole plan of the Jewish nation is to be a Kiddush Hashem, that they will teach people, all these years in Shrine was to teach people ideas about God, that God is the source of everything, he's all powerful, he created the world. Now you're going to give the impression that God is weak. It sounds like a funny story. Oh yeah, God took them out and then he killed them in the desert. Oh, because they sinned. It just sounds bad. It sounds like God was a guy at the end, he backed off because he couldn't do it. And so it sounds like they're not going to believe the story because the Jews sinned. Well, God don't do that. God don't punish their own people. It sounds wrong. So that was Moshe's tefillah. That you can't do this because it's going to be a chilul Hashem. Now the Gemara says like this. Gemara's going on this. Mibilti yecholas Hashem. Means that it's from the mibilti, is like from the absence of the yecholas, the ability of God. So the Gemara says, Yecholas, Yachol Hashem Yivayelai. It should have said Yachol, which is Zachar, right? Male. Not Yecholas. Yecholas is feminine. Right? Why did it say Yecholas? It should say Yachol, which is the male form, because God is always referred to a male. Why is it using a girl term, feminine term? So it says, Amar of Elazar. Amar Moshe of Negosh Baruch. So Moshe said before God, Ribono Shalom, Hashem, Achshav Yomra Umas Olam. Now the nations are going to say about you, Tashash Koho Kenekeva, you were weak like a girl. Actually, they're going to say about Hashem that his power was weak like a girl. Ben Yochot Zilan, and he couldn't save them. That's what it says. That's why he used the feminine language, Yecholas, like a girl. He's using that because that's the import of his tefillah. That's what the nations are going to say, that you're weak like a girl. You're not strong like a Ish Milchama, but it's Yecholas, you're strong like a girl. You're weak like a girl. So Amar L'Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said back to Moshe, Ben Amram, son of Amram, Hello Kfaro Nisim Shos Yisalem Aliyam. Didn't they see all these? I split the sea. What are they going to say? I'm weak? I split the sea. I drowned Mitzrayim, the world's strongest nation, strongest army in the world, and I drowned them like nothing. And now they're going to say I'm too weak to go into Eretz Canaan, a smaller land. Mitzrayim, what more do you want than Yamsuf? So Amar Lefanav. So Moshe Rabbeinu said back to God, Ribono Shel Olam, Achsho Yomru. This is what they're going to say. Before one king, That they're able to stand. 31 kings. Apparently, Eretz Canaan had a lot of different guns within it. Any of them, they're not going to be able to stand them. Hashem, 31. That's what they're going to say. That's what. So again, so Hashem says, how could they possibly say I'm too weak? I killed Mitzrayim. So the nations, so Moshe said back, yeah, the nations will say, yeah, Mitzrayim's only one king. This is 31. The problem is, it's still 31 weak kings. It's not, they're still not Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is, in a certain sense, you argue, it's an organized superpower. Right? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Minayim Shechazar Hodelo. How do you know that Hashem admit to Moshe? He went along with Moshe's argument. Shall I forgive like your words. Like your words. Like Moshe's words. It means it's a reference to the tefillah. Moshe was right.
Wasn't
it? I don't know if that was a chedek. I think that was by this.
Was it?
I'm not sure. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel.
Was it Yom Kippur?
We say it on Slichos.
Oh, but I mean, when the day that Hashem said Salachti Kedvarecha, was that on Yom Kippur?
Raglan, they say it was on Tishah.
Tishah B'Av, but then Hashem did, yeah. I think.
On the close. Yeah, maybe. It says, it's Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, Kedvarecha.
Because that's the time that Moshe, no, after it. By the Egel, Moshe went up, came down, he saw that they did the Egel, he right. Broke the little post, he went back up.
Right.
That time frame.
Kippur?
Yom Kippur.
That was also on Tishah B'Av, where... No, I think that's Shavuot with Hamas. Yeah, okay, whatever it is. It doesn't really matter for this. It says, Tanur Yishmal, Kidvarecha, Svati Kidvarecha, Asidim Umos Olam Lomar, the nations of the world are going to say, Ashrei Talmud Shrava Modelo. Fortunate is the Talmud who's a master or admits them. Yeah, but the point is, it's saying is that Moshe Rabbeinu won this argument. So it's just kind of funny. I mean, the argument is funny. It's interesting to understand the back and forth, right? There's all back and forth here, but it's strange that Moshe is being depicted as the winning party in an argument with Hashem, right? You wouldn't think that should happen. Hashem let him win. Okay, because I mean, he let him. It was up to Moshe to come up with a good argument.
I mean, I was just learning Ezekiel that Ezekiel didn't get married in. He didn't get married. He buried in Babel just because they were the dry bones, and God asked him. Back to life, he said, only you know. Right. And she said that one of the Parashim said that when God asked, he should have given them an argument of why they should be able to come back to life. You shouldn't just be like, I don't know.
Oh, I understand that.
So,
God gives man the ability to make an argument. Yeah. Okay, that's good. That's good. So we'll have to see the details of how the argument works, though, right? And that's kind of, it's a strange argument. The whole back and forth is interesting. But you'll see that's not exactly what the Rosh was interested in. Okay, so we can think about that and we can take it up, but let's go on the Rashba's course here. Okay? Okay, so what's the starting point of this Gemara? Is that it says it should have said Yachol and instead it said Yacholas. Right?
Thank you so much.
That bothers you.
I feel like, I mean, so many of my friends in school would use that and be like, see, there's another time where the Torah hates girls. Like, I don't know, I feel like. Girls, maybe girls aren't physically strong, but they're emotionally
still not.
Like they have.
I know, but we're talking about physically. That we're talking about saying is that God was not able to fight against the 31 nations of the world. So, I mean, to say that a person is fights.
That's not the argument, though. The argument is that a girl could become just as physically strong, not naturally be.
Oh.
That's
girls.
What they would say, your friends.
Yeah. But it's not true.
Why not?
I mean,
there's such a thing as that men are stronger than women.
Yeah, but there's plenty of women who...
But so what? The point is that in general, men are stronger, and if you want to depict and say that he's weak, there's an idea of saying he's weak like a girl, just like a girly man. It's like an idea. It's like a person is... Girls are weak. If physically... I mean, maybe your friends want to think that girls are stronger and physically, well, you know... More capable than men? Was there wrong? But they're not. But they're not.
Because they make you what?
The Olympics, when you're in the prove, if you're male or fence, males have a big advantage.
Yeah, why? Do they have sports? Why are men and women separate in sports?
Because physically they have an advantage. Over.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I understand. I'm not saying that, but I just feel
the Torah, they should be against. That? They should be against like golf and tennis and all different sports that separate between men and women because they say men in the Olympics.
There's nothing wrong with saying. Different.
Or weaker. There's something wrong. There's nothing saying weaker. Physically weaker. There's nothing wrong with that.
I feel like it's negative, though. And that's what I don't
it might be negative. What's wrong with it? It's negative. It's physically negative.
I know.
And women are better at holding kids.
Yeah.
and raising kids and giving birth to kids. They're just different. I mean, men are physically strong.
I mean, I
just imagine a man crying if he has to go through labor and childbirth. And
yeah, they're just better at that. I mean, they're different things. They're different. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the, I mean, the, you can, this is like you can talk about different things. You could say that, you know, you could question smarter, this, that. That's already touchy types of subject. But to say that men in general are stronger than women, I think if someone's offended by that, then I think they got, you know, they got a problem. I'm not saying, of course, you could have a weak man and a strong woman. That's, but as a group, there's no doubt men are physically stronger than women. Why in every single right, in every single sporting event, they're always, they separate the men and the women. They don't say, wouldn't it be fair for women to be in a, men to be in a woman's thing? Why not? It's an unfair advantage. What's so unfair about it? Women could be just as strong as men. But it's not true. It's obvious that it's not true. So, but here it's saying is that, or you could send all the women to the front lines of the army and whatever. Is, I don't know if that's the way it works. I mean, maybe with guns they could do that, but is that, would it take a, go out and fight in a war with a, I mean, look, maybe a modern day woman could do it. I don't really think so. But maybe your friends could.
All the proof is, like, when you look at the army, still, like, predominantly on the battlefield.
Yeah, and especially if you want to go and fight, you know, if you want to go have a hands-to-hand battle or something like that, you can send the woman out to fight the to fight that battle.
Apparently, in those times when they were fighting there as well, it was arm-to-arm combat.
Yeah, right, arm-to-arm, exactly. You ever see women in those? I mean, let's say that's just because of the way back then, whatever, but it's just, whatever. But the point is, it's trying to say that they're going to say that God is weak, is physically weak, and he's not an Ish Milchama. Do they want it to say Isha Milchama? You know, Hashem Isha Milchama. I mean, the idea was a man of war, so they're going to... It's trying to say, it's referencing that they're going to say God is weak. Say, that's the way they'll make fun of God. They'll say that he's supposed to be an Ish Milchama. Look at that, he's like, he can't even fight. So he was weak. But what about the grammar here? He's saying is it should have said Yachol. And instead it said Yecholas, right? Which is feminine. So, you don't know grammar? Question on that? Did you say we built the Yachol? What?
Yecholas.
So what is Yecholas? So what type of word is Yecholas?
I thought Yecholas was like the ability.
The ability, exactly. It's a noun. It's a noun.
Yeah.
It's a noun, which is a feminine noun. If you're talking about a man's ability, it's also Yecholas. Nouns don't change when you use them by man and woman.
Right.
Right? It's just a noun. That's just what it is. Bias is bias. It doesn't matter as a man. Verb would change. So if you use yachol, like I guess a verb changes, right? If you use yachol or yacholah, maybe that would be man or a female, right? But being built to yacholas means the ability. It doesn't mean he's not able. Able, I guess, is like somewhat of a verb, right? Somehow able, so yachol sounds like a verb, exactly a verb, but he's able or he's not able. But the ability is a noun, and it's a feminine noun. So what's it saying? It should have said yachol. It couldn't have said yachol.
He's not going to convert the whole language for this.
Yeah, right. Exactly, that's the language. So the Rashba notices this, okay? If you think about it, you realize it. But he says, Da ki lo ola al das Rabbi Elazar sheish hefresh b'dikta kaloshon ben yachol yicholas. She says, Achuzan keva. Don't think that Rabbi Elazar thought that it's the difference between Yachol and Yecholas is male and female. Shemilas Yecholas Shem. It's a name, which means a noun. No fil ben zach ben lekeva goes by male and female. So what then? Rak shedikdek diktuk amak. Rather, he's making a deep, he did a deep point of grammar, of diktuk. Okay. Bein poel l'shem. Being a verb and a noun. Okay? I could stop really further, but I think he's made his point. Yeah, he's going to go further and talk about other stuff, but... It gets a little longer, but... I mean, I could go into the whole thing, but... Maybe... What's the difference? Can you hear what he's saying, or no? The difference between verb and a noun. Okay, verb is an action word, and verb has different genders. Right? Noun is just feminine. So, it could have said... There's two ways to say the same thing. Could say God didn't have the ability, or you could say God wasn't able. Okay? But it didn't say, see, when you say he wasn't able, you'd say, Hu lo yachol. We built the yachol Hashem. If it was feminine, you'd say, we built the yacholah. Right? If that's a verb. It could have used that, In fact, if you were writing an essay, what would you say? He doesn't have the ability or he's not able?
He
doesn't have the ability. Why?
No, it's the opposite.
You said the opposite. Why would you say the opposite?
Because more...
Right. More direct form. Microsoft Word will tell you. Passive. Consider revising.
Passive
voice. Right? Now, does that... Did you say he doesn't have the ability is a little bit beating around the bush. He's not able. Why do you tell you he's not able is it's a more direct thing. Right? I think, perhaps, is what you mean, but it's just the normal way to write would be to say he's not able, right? Hashem isn't able, and in which case it would have used male, right? It would use the male word. But he's saying is the Torah went out of its way to change it into a noun, to say it revealed the yicholas, to make it into a noun.
Is it the Torah, or was it William Moshe phrased it?
The way Moshe phrased it, yes, the way Moshe phrased it. The way Moshe phrased it, presumably, right? So why did he do that? So he's saying, yes, that's what he's saying is, it's like what Sarah said, because in choosing the noun, it has a feminine, it's an effeminate, but the noun is feminine whether it's used by man or female, but it's using a feminine word. So in other words, it's not saying, that's Rashi's point, is Belozer is not saying because he said Yecholas as opposed to Yechol, because you can't say Yecholas, Yecholas is feminine, that's it. But it's why did he choose a noun as opposed to the standard proper way to say it, which would be to use a verb. So he's saying it's because when you use a verb, it would come out as male, but he wanted to have a connotation of a weakness. And by choosing the noun, he chose that it ends up being a feminine word, which implies weakness. So therefore, that's where he's getting it from. Rashi was pulling out, don't read the Gemara like it sounds at first sight, but realize, that's why he's saying, dik, 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 amok. It's like a deeper point than meets the eye. You're reading what you don't realize, you have to think into it. But Rabbi Elazar read the pasuk carefully. He's saying, why did straight reading the pasuk, no one would ever would blank. Fine, grammatically, perfectly great. But wait, listen, why did he use the noun and not the verb? And he's going off of that. Which is amazing, the subtlety in the Torah. You know, here's the subtlety of Rabbi Elazar to pick up on that kind of thing. Now, you just read the Torah, you wouldn't, grammatically, it's already fine. You know, but you see the choice, you have a right to see the way the Torah chooses its verb. That's how you see the depth of the Torah. Every word is measured in this type of way. Usually nobody just gloss over things like that. That's why I think, if you look at the Mefarshim, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Anach, a lot of them do it, they talk about it, they use the Torah grammar a lot. And usually skip over those Rashis and Rashim, you know, because you don't know grammar that well. But they're really studying it because, especially the Torah, is written with the nth degree of grammar. And if there's a change from the proper grammar, then it's because it's referencing an idea. So you can only notice those ideas if you're an expert in the grammar, if you know the grammar properly. You'll see when it's off a little bit. And the little deviations from the normal grammar point to ideas in the Torah, which is a whole different level of depth which you could get at by knowing these things. You have to kind of believe that the Torah is deep, though, in order to, you know, you kind of gloss over these things. Nah, whatever. Certain confidence in the depth of the Torah that's just written by God, they have those ideas.
45 ideas, which I guess is good, like, not all of them are right. Well, like, Masha, right? Are they all right? Like,
well, that's a good question. But just because, like, for instance, a scientist could look at the world, and you can investigate it very deeply and thoroughly and ask a lot of questions, do experiments, and come up with all kinds of theories, right? But you'll say, anyone could just take up and do all kinds of crazy things and mix together chemicals and say, do all this magic stuff and say, now how do you know, therefore don't do science, because anyone could do these crazy things, you know?
Like, how do you know which one's right?
Okay, so how do scientists know? Yeah. Or medicine. Say, don't do medicine, because look, I know a lot of witch doctors who take all these crazy things and tell you to drink this, drink that, jump on the thing, and do this crazy thing, do that crazy thing, therefore let's not do medicine. How do I know that medicine is right?
Well, you know, science, I guess some of them at least thought it made sense to do it.
It's true, as is the case. So therefore, by that measure, so we shouldn't study medicine, because back then they thought it made sense, and they were wrong, so they do it.
I'm more like, asking, how do you know which one is right? Not saying you shouldn't.
Oh, okay, fine. So how do you know that modern medicine is right and which medicine isn't right? Sure.
I guess now it works better results.
Okay.
Empirical evidence, you tell.
Okay. That's one way. My point is that there's such a thing as advanced knowledge, and there's such a thing as judging theories and trying to figure out which one is better and which one is not as good. And you have to use your mind to figure out which ones make sense, which don't make sense. So there's such a thing as bad ideas, That's interesting. Good ideas. And, well, I mean, you have to know how to work out ideas, and you have to have a mind to guide you. And if it just makes sense, go for it and try to proceed. Because by you picking apart the language of the thing and coming up with good ideas means you're opening up the door for someone else to say bad ideas. Well, you have to be able to determine between good ideas and bad ideas. All you have is your mind, you know? No real other. Just that's why I'm giving examples. Like, there's always going to be crazy medicine guys, and there's always going to be good medicine guys. And the difference is these guys are intelligent in proper steps, and those guys are using ridiculous methodology, and that's the difference. And how do we know? We use our minds, and we figure it out. You know, there's no magic solution for how to tell exactly, but other than use your mind and do your best. So I'd say the same thing in learning. There are going to be people who do say funny ideas by picking apart the... But that can't deter us from... Now, if it's in the Torah, just because there is depth, and this is what Rashba is claiming, and what the Mepharshim is holding, is that there's depth in every word of the Torah. It is. Does that mean you can do anything? You can just take out the letters and say anything you want? No.
I don't understand what the limud is from the fact that Moshe was arguing with the word Yecholas. Right. Moshe used the word Yecholas instead of Yachol. He used a noun and verb. Because... hints that part of his argument was he was referring to what the nations might say, but that Hashem is weak. Like, what is the learning for us reading that now? That, like, you're arguing you should pick the right words? Like, what? I don't understand what the...
Well, no, we have to get into his idea. Right. I mean, he's just getting started. But he's just starting off by mentioning what the grammar, you know, the grammar is here. That's the way Rabbi Elazar is starting off his idea. But it's part of Moshe Rabbeinu's idea, his tefillah, is to convey that this is what they're going to say. So I guess he's using a figure of speech, which is going to convey that sentiment. You know, but this is the beginning of the idea. I mean, he's still developing it. I just wanted to stop on it because I think it's an interesting point about the Torah and about how careful reading there, Rabbi Elazar and the Rashba are doing this thing that more than we would normally be accustomed to doing, you know?
Well, Rashi does that all the time, doesn't he? When I question the Pasuk, a lot of times it's, this word doesn't seem like it belongs here, it's extra, or, you know, like that.
It's true, but it's usually not that moving, at least to me. I mean, he says it, but you always feel like, what's he doing? I don't know. If you get it, then you get it. I mean, here, I think we get it. It's like if you realize the thing, it's a subtle point, but when you think about it, it makes sense. So I think most of those Rashis, they go on deaf ears, at least to me. Like, I don't know exactly what he's talking about. It's not that inspiring or moving or, you know. Like, I think here you can kind of see his point. It sounds like one of those things. Oh, it should have said, Yecholas, whatever. And the Rashba's saying is, don't interpret this the way it sounds. It sounds kind of like sounds like a grammatical mistake. Either it sounds like cute and whatever, or if you think you know grammar, it sounds like you're making a mistake. And the Rashba's saying is, no, he's not making a mistake. He knows what he's talking about. He's a deep point in that, you know. But I think there's an interesting point, just to digress for a second, is that there's a Gemara in Sota which talks about different Rabbanim and says how great they were. So it says, for instance, it says Rabbi Yonasi was a great Anav, modest. So it says humble. So Rebbe died, Anava died. Shemesh Rebbe batal Anava. No one, the whole midah of Anava, the highest level of that character trait, was lost once Rebbe was passed on. He had that unbelievable character trait. As an aside, Rebbe wrote the Mishnah. But whatever, let's put that aside. So it says, Mishemesh Rebbe Akiva batal Kavod HaTorah. So when Akiva died, Kavod HaTorah was knocked down. What's Kavod HaTorah? It says that Rebbe Akiva was Doresh every single one of the crowns. Maybe story like this, the Gemara, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw God putting little crowns on top of the letters. You know, if you letters of the Torah, they're like top of the letters. Not every letter. Certain letters have like special ways to write the letters of the Sefer Torah. Because all of a sudden, Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, "What are these crowns for?" Oh, what's this? So he says, "There's going to be someone in the Rebbe Akiva who's going to be Doresh every one of the crowns." Sora, only certain letters have crowns and other ones don't. So which ones don't? It's all in the Sora. Which ones get and which ones don't? So he says, Akiva is going to be Doresh now. And it says Rabbi Akiva, when he was so great of a, you know, figure at the Torah that he was Doresh. He was able to explain why every single letter had it, whatever. He was involved in that whole ballpark of figuring out should and shouldn't have grounds. That was when Rabbi Akiva died, Kavod HaTorah was gone. So
does that mean that Torah that we have today doesn't really have the crowns in the proper place? Or because we don't have the...
I'm not sure. Well, no, there's a story about the... I don't know. I'm not sure if we do or not. Forget. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't. Or no, I forget. I don't remember. But the question is, so does that sound right? That Rabbi Akiva died, Kavod HaTorah was gone. He was Dorish those things. Does that sound... Well, not really.
I don't think so.
Why? Right, what should it say?
So, like, knowledge.
Right. Right. You would say, you should say, Mishabesh Rabbi Akiva, Batal Chachma, Batal something like that. Yedias HaTorah, something, the depth of the Torah. What does it do with Kavod HaTorah? Kavod is like you honor the Torah, you stand up for the Torah. Right? What does that mean, Kavod Torah? It says, Rashi there says, is because he knew there was nothing there that was Levatala. Nothing in the Torah was for naught. Means that he had the utmost respect for the Torah that he knew that every crown was meaningful. What's the point? It's still not that. Right? Better or not really better? So here's what I think it's saying, is that, or what do you think? Why don't you guys tell me what you think? You hear the question? What is still? What does that do with Kavod HaTorah? Right?
He gives a certain, like, okay. That much credit to...
Okay. But let me ask you, even after he died...
He really different.
Okay, good. But even after he died, shouldn't... What? So he must have told someone. And there are all those ideas. Like, what do you have to... The fact that he was able to do it and no one else was able to do it, you think is a testament to his intelligence or his you know, or something. So when he died... Let him tell his students that there are all those ideas and there's this depth, and therefore, so now we know that. So, you know, like, what does it mean when he died, the Kavod HaTorah was gone?
You know what I mean? There's a certain sensitivity.
Okay.
That he didn't have that level of sensitivity.
Yes, how's that Kavod HaTorah?
A certain mida that he was born with or he developed life.
Is that Kavod though, or is that sensitivity of...
But I'm asking, is it a mida? Is it a... Learned, you know, pass on to a student?
No, that's true, but I'm not saying, yeah, but how, why is this that? Why is this Kavod? I would agree Kavod isn't something you can pass on, but how does this have anything to do with Kavod? Not just because Kavod can't be passed on doesn't mean that because it can't be passed on, Kavod.
Right.
So I'm saying, how is this Kavod?
It is, because, like, you have to have a certain respect. Little...
Okay, good.
Little, like, crown...
Okay, good.
Means something.
Good.
So... To have that, to be able to like realize like every little thing, it's people try and realize it, but they can't actually do it. So when he passed away, like some people know, okay, yeah, there is something like that, but they don't have it themselves.
Right. Okay. Good. Good. Let me just develop it maybe a little bit further. But I think it's saying is that if a normal person would try to figure out ideas on these grounds, they simply wouldn't be able to do it. Why? Not because they're not smart enough, because they wouldn't have the confidence. In other words, in order to really figure out a hard problem, you have to be willing to put in hours. The reason why you're able to put in those hours, for instance, there's a problem, a contradiction in the Rambam. Now, someone who's seen 100 contradictions in the Rambam and has seen them play out, he's in hours and hours and hours to try to work it out. Someone who hasn't is going to say, okay, contradiction, right? If you show me a contradiction in Shakespeare, I don't know that Shakespeare is consistent, and I'm not going to put you able to put in more than a minute into the thing, because for all I know, there's no answer. So how you simply can't do it. You couldn't force me to think for more than a minute about it. I simply would not be able to force myself to do it. Because without the confidence, a person can't just think about something, just start getting distracted. You're able to think about something because you know there's an answer. You know there's a solution, and you're confident. Your whole self is confident that there's a solution. You're going to work towards finding that solution. You are doubtful. If you don't have the full confidence in the Kavod, in the Torah, and the greatness of the Torah, you're not going to be able to put the time in better. So Rabbi Akiva, the Chazal are saying, is that the fact that Rabbi Akiva was able to do it was not because he was the smartest, but Kavod, that there was nothing in God's Torah that was for naught. There's a little thing here and not there, it must be there's a reason. But since he had that full confidence, he was able to devote his energy. So it reminds me of this grammar thing, is that we wouldn't be able to do this stuff with the grammar because we don't have the confidence that every little, you know, yol as yachol is significant. So how long are you going to think about these things? You just don't... You have to see this time and time again that the Rishonim do, the Ibn Ezra does. He knows the grammar of the Torah. The more you see the depth of the Torah, the more you're willing to put your time and energy into thinking about things in the Torah. You know, and it kind of builds on itself. You can't start off and someone can't tell you, yeah, there are great ideas in the Torah. Now work for an hour to figure out the idea. You don't believe them. And even if you do believe them, you just can't do it until you see it yourself. And that's kind of the more you learn, the more you experience the depth and the beauty of the Torah, the more you gain the ability to really work at a problem. Because you know that there are solutions. You know the Torah is true. You know it's from God, and you know that the answers are there. And you know that if you work hard enough, there is a solution. That's the kind of thing that's part of Kabbalah Dora, you know, ability to be able to see that. And that's what Sanger Akiva, you know, with him, it was lost. Interesting is because you would think it's intelligence, but you see, in a certain sense, more significant than the intelligence is the Bida of the Kabbalah, the respect for the Torah.
Have that confidence now?
No, apparently not.
Just not to that extent, maybe.
Right, not to that extent. But for every letter, for every crown, I mean, they have confidence about a Rambam or about a whatever, but, I mean, these things are subject to big grade. Presumably the other rabbis in the time of Rabbi Akiva had a lot of it, but not to that extent. It's all about extent.
Yeah. But are you saying also, like, Kabbalah Torah?
It's a confidence that it's, Kabbalah is confidence in the truth and in the depth of the Torah. It's not just confidence. Confidence about, it's a respect for the depth of the Torah. Yeah, it's not just, yeah, you can't just fake it. It's a true, deep conviction, an internal conviction of the unbelievable depth of the Torah that you can't convey to anybody. It has to be an internal attitude of the reality, which has to be won over by itself. As the more you see the depth of the Torah, the more you get it. But it means also, I guess, you know, it's interesting to see how exactly to develop it, but it's something which only Rabbi Akiva had to that extent. Of course, there are varying degrees of it, but it means he was like in a different league. As he died, he was gone. I mean, it's presumably dead. Okay, so what I guess we'll do is next time we'll try to take further in this Rashba. Well, he's going to go into it. I mean, I'm just scratching the surface just at the grammatical point, but he's going to try to take up. You guys can think about it if you want that Gemara. The strange back and forth between Moshe Rabbeinu and Josh Baruch. Like, what's the point of the thing? So if you want to look at the Rashba, it's on page Membe. Yes, on page Membe. It's Mem Gemma. Okay, good question. Good.